Hey guys, this is Cole Kublik from WJOX in Birmingham and the SEC Network, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 514.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick!
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with AwardGoReader.com and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, the Brian Harsin family, and our Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we have a new coach.
For the first time in this podcast,
yes,
Auburn has hired a new coach.
Well, let's see. We started at the end of 12, so we were able to bring Gus in at the very beginning of this podcast. And our entire podcast history has been the history, basically, of the Gus Malzahn era. And so yeah. We finally get to have somebody different, for better or worse. We got to think for better, right? I mean, until we know differently, we're pretty excited. I'm totally positive about it, aren't you?
I'm excited. I mean, it was tough making a change, but I'm happy with the outcome of the process and looking forward to talking about it tonight.
Well, you know, one of the first things that occurred to me when they said who it was for sure was that it seems like every time we've ever had to talk about replacing a coach, whether it was at the end of 12 or whether there have been, a couple of other times that we've said, if we fired Gus, what would we do? The two or three times during our show's history that we've talked about it at all, one name that you were always very big on was the Boise State and Washington coach.
Chris Peterson.
Yes, who played the villain on Justified as well. Yes. And Doug Cole with Raylan Givens. And you always liked Chris Peterson. And I got to thinking, this is almost like we hired Chris Peterson in some ways, isn't it?
It is. I mean, Chris Peterson was number one on my list in 2012 when we hired Gus.
Right. That's what I remembered.
And so I've always respected him as a coach. I think he was an excellent coach. And, I'm excited. Harsin was his offensive coordinator and his handpicked successor at Boise. So it is like we hired him in a way. I hadn't thought about that. And I do like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That came to me as like, this is the guy. It's like if you couldn't get the guy, this is basically the protege to the guy. And it's, and by all accounts, a really good guy. And, it's funny. Just looking at him reminds me of how the British soccer commentators, like the men in blazers and those other guys, they will say that so-and-so, he really looks the business. And when they say he looks the business, they mean like he looks like he's no nonsense, like a tough guy. He looks like a coach that come in and kick your butt. And if you didn't like Gus, we've talked about before how Gus wasn't a pencil neck geek, but he wore glasses a lot and that kind of gave him that aura. And he always came across as being kind of intellectual, at least in a football way. People looked at him that way, whether that was, even though I think that was completely unfair. But you look at Brian Harsin and you basically see a football coach, don't you? I mean, it's nothing else. He looks like he's either be like a Marine or a football coach, basically.
Sure. Or a race car driver, which we'll talk about. But I think it's fair. It is clear that Brian Harsin has, I think, more of an edge to him than Gus did.
Yeah.
I think Gus is a nicer person. And Harsin is somebody that, eventually played quarterback, but started out playing like fullback and linebacker. And I think he kind of thinks that way. I think it's clear, like he's, a harder edge is a good way to describe it, the difference between him and Gus. And that's not a slight at Gus. I mean,
no.
One of the things I appreciate about Gus the most is that he did care about other human beings.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that Harsin doesn't, but I'm also saying that he has a more of a, from listening to him and watching him, He has more of that kind of persona that you're talking about.
Yeah, you could see where Quentin Riggins liked him, right? We are told that they hit it off real well on the interview. Mm-hmm. And I could see a guy that started out playing linebacker before quarterback. I could see where that would be somebody that Quentin Riggins would certainly take a shine to, for sure. All right, so your question was, what was our immediate reaction on hearing we hired Brian Harsin? It was a weird day because we were mm-hmm. listening to all these different reports coming in, and they were just across Twitter. It was just one thing after it was like, oh, they're talking to this person, and then you wait 5 minutes, and oh, that person's out. And then you wait 2 minutes. Oh, they're talking to this person. You wait 5 minutes. Oh, that person's out. And it was just like we were just changing channels on the TV until we finally stopped on one. And the last name we heard before this one was actually Hugh Freeze. It was like, oh, they've gone to Hugh Freeze now. It's like, alert, alert. Ooga, ooga. We've gone to Hugh Freeze. We've played the Hugh Freeze card. Alert, alert. And so you and I were kind of like, I don't know about this, right? And then all of a sudden, right in the middle of that, no denouement on Hugh Freeze or anything, right in the middle of all the Hugh Freeze freneticism, suddenly the word gets out there talking to Brian Harsin, and then I think we've got a deal. So what was your reaction at that point?
I mean, it had been a crazy day and a crazy couple of days in the coaching search. It was honestly hard to get work done.
Yes.
On those days.
I can testify.
Try to check on stuff and see what was going on. But also, I mean, it was about normal for Auburn. I've seen other people say it was about the normal period of time it took us to hire other coaches. So, But it was weird that Harsin's name was never mentioned.
Nope.
As a candidate at all until he was announced.
That was bizarre.
So I mean, one of the things I want to do is I want to kind of split this into two separate things to talk about why Brian Harsin and then talk about the process as a separate thing. But my initial thing was I was happy. I was very happy because I felt like on our last episode, we talked a lot about, you know, what did Auburn want? What did different people at Auburn want? And what did we want? And I talked about how I wanted the person who was just a really good football coach. And that's what we hired. So that's what made me happy about it.
I think that there's two kinds of great football coaches. There's the great kind that everybody already knows is great. And there's the great ones that have not yet reached the mountaintop to where everybody realizes it. And the ones that are already perceived to be great don't always do great. They can fall on their faces. You know, like the guy that went to Texas, you know, is not having a great, the guy that went to Virginia Tech is not having a great, great run. There are coaches that are perceived to be the next big thing and then fall on their faces. There's other coaches that come in under the radar and turn out to be big. I mean, I would argue that Nick Saban coming from Michigan State to LSU, it was just like another weird LSU hire at the time. I didn't think anything big about it. I remember thinking, oh, they got that guy from Michigan State. Huh, okay, whatever. But this is a guy that if there was a coach out there that is ready to be great and just hasn't quite been a big national splash yet, this might be the guy. Would you agree?
Yes. I think, you know, when you look at the non-Power 5 programs and who's won the most over the last 5 years, you know, Boise is there. You know, We always think a lot about these other teams in the American, whether it's, you know, Central Florida or Cincinnati or Memphis, or whatever, but Boise's had as much success as any of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this guy has a reputation as a really good offensive coach and a good football coach, but also he's both young but very experienced.
Yes.
I mean, he's only 44, but he has a lot of head coaching experience. Some of the other guys we were looking at were the same age or older, had much less head coaching experience. Absolutely. Or no head coaching experience.
That's right.
So I think that's a huge thing in his favor. And I like what you said. I think he is someone who absolutely wants the opportunity to compete for championships. And I think he was, you know, I mean, I think when Arkansas and Missouri were open last year, I think they talked to him or called him or whatever, but he didn't go. And I think he was talking to Boise State about getting them to try to leave the Mountain West and go to the American because he felt like that was the only, you know, that was a better competitive conference. And that's where they needed to be to reach their potential in football.
Yep.
So I think that's a sign of a person who, you know, wants more. And wants to, you know, compete at the highest level that he can in football and be successful. And so I think that's attractive in a coach.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you knew who he was immediately, right?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I did too. I don't blame people that didn't, though. I know that a lot of Auburn fans were like, who is this? I've never heard of him. And I'm like, well, if you don't really follow anything but Auburn, I would understand that. You know, I immediately knew who he was just because I remember that they had that sort of that revolving door between Boise, Arkansas State, and Auburn when kind of went like when Gus left Auburn to go to Arkansas State. I believe he was like the offensive coordinator at Boise, but when Gus came back to Auburn, he came down to Arkansas State, and then when the opportunity then came available, he went back to Boise as the head coach. So we've kind of had that little revolving situation there going the what do you call it? But anyway, so revolving door. So I knew he was that guy that had kind of bounced back and forth, and it made me happy that he had been in Arkansas State. He's also been at Texas, so he's been around the South. He's not like lived his whole life in Seattle or Boise or something. He has been below the Mason-Dixon line or whatever have you, and so he's got some experience beyond just his own backyard. So that's good too. So, well, let's break him down a little bit and why we. And you already pointed out we either needed a recruiter or somebody that could evaluate and what we have. So talk about that a little bit.
Sure. I mean, I think on that side of it, you either wanted to get somebody like the Oregon coach who you felt like could come in and try to compete at the absolute recruiting level with the Georgias or the Alabamas, or you wanted somebody who was, used to fighting uphill on the football field against teams with more higher recruited talent, but also somebody who was really good at evaluating. I mean, Boise gets a lot of good players because of their name now, but, they don't get their pick of guys on the West Coast. Those kids are going to go to Oregon or USC or Washington or whatever. So they're competing with other schools, and they have to evaluate well to get the right players, and he's good at that, and he has a lot of experience in that. So I think in particular, he has a reputation as being a guy that can identify and evaluate quarterbacks very well. He was the very first coach to ever offer Zach Wilson, the BYU quarterback, and Zach Wilson was committed to Boise for a long time because Brian Harsin had, scouted him and recruited him in high school and identified his talent. And the only reason that Zach Wilson ended up going to BYU is because he's Mormon and they really wanted him. So, but that, I think that's an example of, at that position, he can identify talent and recruit it. They had the son of Mark Rypien, the former Redskins quarterback at Boise, and he recruited and developed him. So I think, but also at other positions too, I think they can do that. So I think part of the idea is, that Auburn can continue to recruit at the level that Auburn has under Gus, but also that we will do the thing we have done before, but also do it better, where the lower ranking guys in the recruiting class, particularly on the offensive side, we have some better evaluation of who can really, contribute and make a difference. And some guys who trust their instincts and knowledge about that and not going to be limited to, this guy's a whatever, 4-star on this person's board. They're going to look at these people and go, this guy can play for us, so let's get him.
And then develop them, which is something that obviously we've had an issue with in a number of positions. Our defense has been doing pretty well over the last few years, but they were certainly concerned that our receivers weren't getting any better, our quarterbacks weren't getting any better, and our running backs were getting – I don't even know how to describe what's been going on with our running backs. I mean, basically our running backs either play or transfer, and I've never understood what – we bring in 5-star running backs, don't use them, and they transfer over and over and over, and I don't know, but I don't get it. But anyway, so, yeah, I think that's for sure a legit thing to say about him is that he can – if we can continue to recruit at the same level – and then develop better, so that we have a good offensive line. So we have a quarterback that gets better year to year rather than worse. So that we have receivers. I mean, there have been some people saying, well, maybe he can keep some of our coaches. Honestly, I mean, I could see the use of keeping like Cadillac in terms of recruiting and knowing the South and knowing, talent and everything. But you know that Cody Burns is going to go wherever Gus does or go off on his own now. He's not going to stay at Auburn to coach for a different coach. I just don't see any way that that happens. I can't imagine any scenario where Cody, as much as we all love Cody, I mean, there's been questions over the years about, you know, he's a good recruiter, but I don't know about his, have he really his, and it may not even be Cody so much as just what he's asked to teach him. I mean, you know, yes. if the passing game is super simplistic, what's Cody supposed to do about that, you know, honestly? So,
yeah.
So
no,
what do you
fair.
Yeah. So, well, what about Harsin's resume and his past success that we haven't already talked about? Anything else we need to hit on there?
I mean, he was the offensive coordinator at Boise for a long time and kind of their glory years when Kellen Moore was there and they were, you know, finishing in the top five in the country, winning a bunch of games against, you know, power teams. He left, you know, he was the offensive coordinator at Texas for a few years, like you said, and then he was the head coach at Arkansas State, and then he's been the head coach at Boise ever since Chris Peterson left. And they've been very successful. I mean, they've been winning 10, 11 games a year, winning the conference, you know, playing some big out-of-name conference teams and having success against them. So he's had a really good career and a lot of, again, for a guy as young as he is, he's coached a lot of football already. And I think that's attractive.
And what do you think about his offense? I've watched quite a few YouTube videos the last few days. And it looks, I mean, honestly, these days, everybody's offense looks like Gus's offense used to look. But it looks like he has similar schemes, but with more complex passing. And it looks like a lot of it comes out of the pistol rather than the pure shotgun. Did you notice that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And they'll do some of that and then some regular shotgun. Mm-hmm. I mean, his offense, you hear people describe it as multiple. And what that really means is like it's kind of between spread and kind of an old school pro style passing game. Right. And so they use a lot of spread stuff. They'll still be guys in motion. They'll still be, you know, kind of they use pace a lot. But it's about even between run and pass attempts. It's not and I think a lot of times people think, you know, West Coast coach with an offense that scores a lot of points, it must be very finesse oriented, but they run the ball very well and very effectively. They're really strong at the point of attack, running the ball. And they use a lot of, you know, sets with tight ends. Honestly, a lot of sets with two tight ends.
Oh, there you go.
And they send them out and catch passes and Woo! Use them as blockers both. So I think, you know, they've had more tight ends catch passes. They've had like two tight ends catch more passes than any Auburn tight end has caught in like 5 years.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious.
I didn't think it was legal for a tight end to catch a pass. This is new. This is a revelation.
We want it this year. I think we're going to get it next year. I think
there's
going to be tight ends on the field catching the ball and in being used in multiple ways.
Well, imagine what Harsin's going to think when he sees J.J. Piguiz.
Piguiz, that's right.
He's going to be like, what have I got here? Mm-hmm. He's going to be, son, aren't you supposed to be over there with the defensive tackles? No, coach, I'm a tight end. Oh, my goodness. His eyes just light up. I get to use this young man as my tight end? Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, the impression I got at the simplest is kind of a base pistol offense with a downhill running attack, pretty much just overpowering the line of scrimmage with good offensive line play is what it looked like to me. I didn't see a lot of fancy pulling and all that. It looked like they just fired off the line and busted holes open and the running back ran downhill, and then kind of a multi-level passing offense. But I didn't notice a lot of standing around surveying the field either. It looked like the quarterback knew exactly where to go and got the ball off very quickly.
He did. They go quickly and they deliver the ball quickly, and the quarterbacks know where they need to go. He has a good reputation as a guy who develops and coaches quarterbacks. Mm. And I think the other thing on the offensive side is it's not a system in the sense that we have been living with for the past, you know, few years. Mm-hmm. A lot of his, you know, offensive philosophy is what can the players do best? Let's use that. And let's mold the offense around what we have and who does what well.
And we don't get
together.
And we don't move to that strategy at game four.
No, we figured that out in the spring.
Wow. Yeah,
and the beginning of the fall. So we come into the games knowing this is what you can do and we're going to use it.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious.
I can see where this is going. All right. So, sometimes the show's theme just writes itself. The other thing you had mentioned here in this opening section of our show notes is off the field, race car driver, his dad owns a race. Tell me more about this. I'm very intrigued now. This is not something I was fully aware of.
You should go back and listen. He did an interview with Stephen Godfrey. There was a podcast that used to be called The Podcast That Played Nobody. Oh, yeah. And Harrison did a one-on-one interview with Godfrey in July of 2019. And it's about an hour, 45 minutes or something. And it's just them talking about football and quarterback development and that kind of stuff. But also Harrison's off-the-field story. And so I think this will be really interesting to Auburn fans. His dad owns a racing team called Outlaw Racing.
Awesome. Awesome.
And yes. And so when he was, in school, he had like a rebuilt muscle car, and his dad gave him the license plate. He has the license plate for Idaho that says Outlaw. His dad had it on his car for a long time, and he put it on his son's car. And then he was playing, football. But also then eventually he, coached football and started his coaching career. He was coaching and racing at the same time. So he is a licensed race car driver. He's raced, like a lot of kids in racing families. He grew up racing every weekend, dirt bikes and go-karts as kids, and then on up to stock cars and other stuff. And he actually did drag racing when he was a young coach. He coached tight ends at Oregon. And then in the summer, he would go do drag racing and funny car racing.
Oh, wow.
And so he loves old American muscle cars and rebuilding cars and that kind of stuff and with his family. And so he talked about when he leaves coaching, maybe go back to the racing business and being involved in racing. So he's into that very much. And
it just gets better and better.
It does. And so I think people will be able to relate to that. But there was a point early in his coaching career where he was doing both those things, and his wife said, they started having kids, and his wife said, okay, pick one. we're coaching months of the year, and then we spent the other 3 months sitting at the racetrack. You got to pick one so we can have some family time at some point.
That sounds like at my house. we spend several months watching football and several months at the racetrack. That's you know what the police say when he goes by now.
What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law.
I've got a new use for that button now. I'm so happy. I'm so happy. Oh, that's so awesome.
I think it shows something about him as a person and the kind of guy he is. So I like that.
That is very, very cool. All right. So let's talk about the process. How did we end up with him and how did it all play out and what do we think about it?
Well, I want to take us back in the Wayback Machine to a week ago where you and I on this podcast were, to be polite, we were kind of freaking out and banging the desk about Auburn's process and what was happening and how we felt about it. And I think two things happened. One is, I think there were some things that, were reported in the news that weren't 100% true. And some of it was, we need to be careful in the future not to overreact to that kind of stuff. Now, I think there's some things that were reported that are true.
Blame yourself.
That's very fair. I'm 100% deserving of that soundbite from some of my reactions.
I wasn't blaming you. That's not what I meant.
I know. But the other thing is, I think this is what happened at the when they fired Gus at the very beginning. Some of the powers that be started to take off on their own and do their own coaching search stuff.
Went rogue.
And then I think Alan Green and the president said, no, we're going to take control of this. And they established the committee and they got the search firm. And so I think sometimes you heard things and they were from people outside of that. And I would say those are the things that were more in the not true category. And I would put, for example, the rumors that we were hiring Hugh Freeze or talking to Hugh Freeze in that category. Mm. I don't think that ever happened for a second.
No, I don't either.
But I think that was people on the outside wanting to throw that out there. Some of the powers that be wanting to throw that out there to kind of influence the process and shift public opinion. I do think there was a group that wanted Kevin Steele to get the job.
Oh, yeah.
And not just because for saving money and stuff, but because they wanted him to get the job because they thought it would succeed. And so But I do think Alan Green kind of took control of this, and you know, his group that was actually doing this, you know, the smaller kind of subgroup that was doing the interviews, you know, I believe was him and Quentin Riggins, and the retired general.
Mm-hmm.
And they interviewed the candidates that they were interested in. And I think they narrowed it down to a few people. You know, I think at that point, it was, you know, Napier and the Clemson defensive coordinator, and Harsin. And, you know, I think they started to talk to each of them and they interviewed them, you know, maybe more than once. And then I think at some point, you know, Alan Green and them kind of zeroed in on Harsin as the guy that they wanted.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they may have offered the job to somebody else before that, maybe the Clemson defense coordinator. Mm-hmm. I do not believe that they ever offered the job to the UAB coach.
No.
I don't think so. One of the stories is that he called them.
Yes.
And said, I'd like to be interviewed for the job.
And they said, new phone, who dis?
Well, I mean, and then they're like, okay, well, out of respect, we'll have somebody talk to you. But then he can say, they talked to me and I'm denying interest now. So,
yeah,
that's a very agent kind of keep your name out there as a hot guy kind of thing. And there are some people who really like Bill Clark. And
that's true. I absolutely true. There have been people for years saying they wish he was Auburn's coach. I think that there absolutely was that was the thing, is that even more, let me put it this way. Every time Auburn has ever searched for a coach in my lifetime of paying any attention to it, which really goes back to in my earliest days, Pat Dye coming in after Barfield. I remember Barfield taking over for Shug Jordan, but I was really little and you were too. Every time though, it's been a case of there was somebody that was the leading figure we were trying to get, and then there were others, it seemed like, for the most part. Whereas this time, it seemed like there were about five different people, and there was about 15 or 20% of the Auburn base that was in favor of each one. And just as many people that, you know, that was their favorite, there were at least as many that said, under no circumstances do I want that person. Mm-hmm. So this was like, this just had a different feel of a coaching search than any other one I can remember in Auburn history, just in terms of it was so divided, and it's basically like if there were five different Bobby Petrinos last time, and you know, half the people loved him and half the people couldn't stand the thought of him, and yet that was true for five of them. And so that's one of the reasons I was very happy that they went out of the box, is they may have found somebody that there was no big groundswell of support for, but they also found somebody that there was no groundswell of opposition to.
Yes. Yes. That, and I think that's a really important point, because we know that the biggest thing now is that we need everybody to row in the right direction, in the same direction.
Yep.
We need kind of a unified front moving forward. And I think you're right that by going this direction, this allowed them to do that. And I think the other big piece of that is it's amazing that we picked somebody that had no connection to Auburn, or the SEC even. And I think that was a big step, but also they kind of went with what we talked about last week, was just who's out there that's a good football coach that we could get, you know?
Yeah. Without those preconceived notions of, well, this is the hot name, you got to go there. They went and found it's such a weird thing, because we're used to it being such an emotional thing. Oh, I want to have, you know, I really want Hugh Freeze. Oh, I really don't like Hugh Freeze. And they just went and found somebody like you'd hire a good professional. You know, it's almost like the difference between, I talk about this in political science class, you know, towns that have like a ceremonial mayor, they just pick the old guy that everybody likes. There's an 80-year-old guy, everybody likes him, let's make him mayor for 4 years. And that's kind of what it looked like that we were going to do, was find some 80-year-old guy that everybody liked and make him mayor for 4 years. This was more like the city planner, where you go out and find a guy with a master's degree in public administration and planning, and you hire him to actually do the job. It just felt qualitatively different.
Yes, exactly. That's a good analogy. And I agree 100%, and that we did the equivalent of that on the football side.
Yeah, yeah, which is still kind of shocking in a way, but we did.
It is. It's very shocking, but also I like that we went out and got somebody who's going to look at how can we do things differently and better, you know?
And And how do we view Alan Green's role in all this? Because I don't think we have. Again, we want to be careful about giving too much blame. We also want to be careful about giving too much credit. But I think there seems to be a general consensus that he had a lot to do with this, and a lot of the credit, at least, you know, we don't know how he's going to do in the future, how the coach is going to do, and his tenure is in some ways now tied to the success of Brian Harsin, as is always the case with any athletics director at a big time football school. But I think we want to be careful not to give him too much credit if this is a great hire. But we also need to make sure that we realize I think he had more to do with this than we originally thought he was going to. You know what I'm trying to say?
Very much. No, very much. I think people viewed him originally as someone in the periphery of this decision.
Yeah.
But he moved himself to the center of this decision and made it happen. But also, I think he kind of took control of the situation and did not let other people control it or control him in the process and made things happen. And I think he also, listened to people but didn't do everything that they asked or wanted. And so I think that's important. And I think if you're the athletic director, whether you hire the coach or somebody else hires the coach, if a coach is hired under your watch, that's how you're going to be evaluated. Yeah. So you might as well hire the best coach you can. Because even if somebody else had hired the coach, they would say, Al Green's responsible. Yes. So if you're going to be responsible for the outcome, then hire the best person. And I think that's what he did. And I'm excited about that.
That's a good point, though, he knows he's going to get the credit or the blame. If you're going to get the blame, you might as well get blamed for doing something you think is right rather than getting blamed for hiring somebody that somebody else wanted. That's exactly right. Yeah, I think that's exactly good. Yeah. So, okay. And I had to point out finally that I did – I posted a meme on Twitter today where I put together – I had a couple extra minutes. I got the from the end of The Mandalorian involving Boba Fett. So if you haven't seen that, I'll have to find a way maybe I'll put it on the Patreon page. But it's basically Jabba, just Auburn being Auburn, Jabba the Hutt, and the way it played out. So let's see. Any other thoughts about the coaching hire, the coaching search, before we talk about the actual football game we have coming up?
No, other than, again, it's Monday night at whatever, but 10 o'clock Eastern. We don't know anything about assistant coaches or who he'll hire, and that'll be the big news. But again, the bowl games basically go through Saturday, and probably some of the other people he wants to talk to are coaching other schools, and he'll be interviewing them this week. And so I think we'll know more as the week moves along on that front.
Yeah, that'll be the next big thing to pay attention to. And what do you think the likelihood is that he retains anybody? I think it's possible he could retain maybe one, and I honestly think Cadillac's the leading contender there, but do you think he retains one or more or none, or what do you suspect?
I think it's possible. I mean, I could see him, him retaining one or two people. I don't know. I think he's going to want to bring some of his people from Boise, right? That are his people.
You would think so.
And I think at the same time he needs to keep or bring in some other people who have experience with SEC recruiting. So whether they're current members of the Auburn staff or other people who have, or other assistants at SEC schools have experience with Auburn recruiting, that's what he needs to do. So I'd like for him to keep one or two people, but if it doesn't happen, I trust him to hire the staff that can work with him and be the best staff that can be. So I'd love for him to keep Carnell and Travis Williams, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah. I want him to have people around him that he trusts and he feels comfortable with and confident in. So I can see the value of keeping, a couple, but I honestly kind of hope he doesn't keep more than one or two, because I kind of want to see what he can actually do with his own staff and not try to, put the square peg in the round hole kind of thing. So, all right. Well, we have a football game, actually a tackle football game coming up against Northwestern. So once again, Auburn goes to Florida to play a team from the Big Ten. And it's one of the beat reporters, I forget which one, just yesterday was tweeting out about how we've only won one game like that in the last 15 years. And that was when we beat Northwestern in 2000 at the end of 2009. We tend to go down there and lose to Wisconsin or Michigan, somebody like that. But this is going to be a very different game from the last time we played Northwestern in Florida, isn't it?
Very different. I mean, that was an epic shootout, multiple overtimes. An insane back and forth game.
It was.
And they're a different team now. You know, Pat Fitzgerald's still the coach, but they, you know, they are a all defense, no offense kind of team. And they have a great defense, but they're no offense at all. And so they're going to want to shut Auburn's offense down and make it a low scoring game. And their defense may very well be able to do that. So we need to, you know, maximize the opportunities that we have. Their defense is really, really good. You know, they, especially against the pass, I would say, they are very effective. They limit opposing passers, you know, to a very low completion percentage. If you saw them play against Ohio State ran the ball well, but they couldn't throw the ball well on them at all. And they've done that to everybody. So I think that's going to be a real challenge. On the other side of the ball, they've only scored more than 28 points once this season. So they won a lot of games kind of in that, you know.
They had a lot of close games. I'm looking at their schedule, and I mean, they put up 43 on Maryland, but then after that, it's just in the 20s pretty much, in a 17, and 20s. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of 24 to 17 games, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, they were beating Ohio State for like the first two and a half quarters of that game, of the Big Ten championship game. And then, Ohio State kept running the ball and running the ball and running the ball. And that was the difference. And so I think that's a recipe for Auburn, that, this could be a game, a tank, DJ Williams, Sean Shivers, and Bo Nix running the ball together could be the difference in a tough, low-scoring kind of defensive struggle.
And what do you think in terms of Gus not being there, but it'll still be, I assume, Chad Morris running the offense? Will we see anything different, or will he be able to, like, do stuff that Gus didn't let him do, or is he going to use this like an audition or for future jobs? I'm just curious what Chad Morris might have our offense doing that it wouldn't have done if Gus was there, or vice versa.
It's a good question. I mean, Kevin Steele's the acting head coach for this game, and Morris is the offensive coordinator. So I'm guessing, Kevin Steele wants to win, and they all want to win. So I'm sure he's going to tell Chad Morris, here's what I think the defense is going to do to you. Do the best you can to score the most points and come up with a plan to win the game. I mean, I think there probably are some things schematically that Gus didn't like that Chad wanted to call. And so we'll probably see him call those things. I think it is an audition for him for other jobs. Northwestern's defense is really good. So if Auburn has success, that'll make him look good. At the same time, Kevin's the acting head coach, Kevin Steele. So I don't think Auburn's going to go out there and like run a bunch of pace and try and keep, and try and move the ball quickly and then put the defense right back on the field on our side. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I don't think we'll see that.
I feel like in our off season at some point when we're looking for something like in the middle of April to do a wishbone on, I think we need to do, I'd be interested in doing a Chad Morris retrospective and bring on who's our guest in the past, War Room Eagle or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
Bring on one of those guys, Stat Tiger, whatever, and kind of go through and look at what's he been like as a coordinator, what's he been like as a head coach, what was he like at Auburn, how did he perform at Auburn, how did that match up to what he's done in the past. I just kind of like to do an autopsy on his coaching career to this point, because I'm just kind of curious if, his results and lack of results this year is him, or it's Gus, or it's some combination, or, what people think about that. Because I don't really know what to think.
That was good.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. All right. So do we have any final thoughts on the bowl game in terms of what we think's going to happen, predictions, anything like that?
I think Northwestern's good. I don't think, they're not obviously on the same plan as Alabama. I don't think they're as good as Georgia. Think they're a solid team, a really good team of defense. But I don't think they're a great team. I think it's a pretty even matchup. Northwestern is honestly slightly favored in this game. And I think, the big thing is I think they're not a very good offense. They have multiple running backs, and they have a quarterback that started out at Clemson and transferred there. And you know, they try and, you know, control the ball and play field position like a Big Ten team and stuff, but they try and run the ball on you. And I think, you know, can Auburn shut down their running game? If they run the ball over us, then we're going to have a real hard time because they're, you know, their defense is tough and we're going to have a hard time scoring more than 24 points. So I think in Auburn's case, we want to shut them down and limit them to field goals. So then we don't have to score as many points against that tough defense. But I honestly think it's a pretty good matchup for us. I think our defense could do it. And I think offensively, I think we have, you know, better skill position talent than they've seen, you know, probably been. And Ohio State was missing a whole bunch of people when they played them. So like probably maybe the best skill position talent they've seen in a game. So
I'm going to say if they win, it's going to be like 17-13. And if we win, it's going to be like 20-17. We get that extra touchdown at the end. It gets us over the hump. That's my prediction. But I really don't know which way it's going to go because without our head coach, I'm just kind of curious to see how it's going to go at all. You know, I really don't have any clue. All right. Well, before we get into our listener questions and a couple of other little updates, we've got to thank the fine folks that keep our programs going. I'm going to zip right along through this to make sure we thank everybody. If for as little as a dollar a month, you can join their ranks and I get to mention you too. And you can, of course, do more than that if you'd like to. This is how we pay the bills and keep these shows coming. And bear in mind, I've released two or three White Rocket shows in addition to the Wishbone the last week or so. John and I reviewed Ready Player 2 for the White Rocket show. Mira and I did a review of Ready Player 2 for the White Rocket show. Jim Yelton, Alan J. Porter, and I just posted today our review of the second season of The Mandalorian. So if you like The Mandalorian, go to the White Rocket side of this and check that out. And you can find those shows, by the way, at whiterocket.podbean.com or just go to plexico.net, plexico.net. It's got links to this show. It's got links to those shows. It's got links to the James Bond shows. Jared's always posting new episodes of The Bond Show. Even when Alan and I aren't doing them, he does his own episodes with his guys. And then there's... yesterday or today, I just posted, and now I don't remember what it was. We did the...
Lord of the Rings trivia?
Yeah, the Lord of the Rings, of course. That was it, because it's you and me. I just think of Wishbone. So, yeah, of course. But, yeah, John and I, yeah. If you're a big Wishbone fan and like to listen to this show, John and I, every Christmas, do our Lord of the Rings trivia battle. And I just posted that yesterday, and I'm going to put a little extra piece that we finished up tonight up tomorrow for it. So check that out. You can support all those programs by going to www.auwishbone.com and click on the big orange button to become a patron. Here are the fine folks who are currently supporting the show. We have Carl Von Drunker, Samuel Salvatore, and Christopher Burleson. And then we have Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, Logan Chilton, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Tom Anderson, Willie Carden, Ann Kangian, AU Falling Up, Blin Bud, God, I'm doing a terrible job tonight, guys. I'm sorry. Ben Bloodworth, Chris Stewart, and Clinton Stewart, who have upped for a new year, guys. Welcome aboard. I got your emails, and we really appreciate it. And I think you guys are going to be moving up the charts here pretty quick. This is just where they have you right now. Then there's Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Manuel Seaman, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, James Greenwell, Joel Beckham, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, Timothy, W.D. Ritchie, Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, Alex Wynn, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Cato the Barner, Chris the Hilton, Chris Thrash. On we go. We also have to thank Colby Butler, Danny Flack, Darius Benton, David Simpson, Die Bama, and not a minute too soon, Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kenoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Owl Go Rhythm, Papa Todd, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Ross, Russell Milling, Shannon Butson, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, welcome aboard Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Tony Perry, Auburn Elvis, Ben Amos, Brandon Sisson, Brandon Smith, Chris Como, Darren Pyle, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrich, Albrick, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Lawrence Kane, Mark Squire, Matthew Flowers, Mick Vijakana, Nicholas Craig, Patrick Williams, Paul Bankson, Robert Drain, we're almost to the end, Robert O. Sammons, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Spanky, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Kenneth Brent Rains, Brent Rumble, Chris, plus our anonymous and one-time donors. We thank you all. Go to www.auwishbone.com, and when you do, you get to do things like be part of our bowl pick'em. And John, I know we want to give an update on the bowl pick'em, but I have to just say my strategy my strategy was supposed to get me to one end of the rankings, and it has, just the wrong end. I'm at the tail end. I am the Williams Formula One team of Capital One bowl picks. So how do you want to do it? You want to give like the top five for this current week?
Sure. So I'm just going to read out their entry names if I'm not sure of who they are. So tied for first with 8 picks correct already.
Wow.
Are Construction Tiger and William Boddy. And the next three are there are 4 people tied for second. John Otsuki, War Eagle Eric, Russell Milling, and Chris Thrash.
There you go.
So, yeah there I am. I'm in the middle of the pack, and as Van said, he's waiting for his upset heavy strategy to kick in. So.
I've gotten 3 right so far. Our leaders have gotten 8 right. And it's funny, I noticed, I looked at my picks, the 3 I got right are the 3 like most obvious, because it tells you what percentage of the pickers picked each team, and the 3 I got right were like 95-5. They were total, basically the equivalent of picking Alabama over Notre Dame 3 times is what I've got so far. I'm not doing too well. And you are considerably ahead of me, but we're all back from that leader group. So we'll be continuing that on through the rest of the bowl season. And that's fun. We got 20 people, 20 playing right now. And so you can join their ranks. John sends out an email when these kind of things come along to everybody who is a member that asks to that wants to participate. So,
and if you're a patron, you could still join now. It's not locked where you had to do it before the thing started. You could still go ahead and do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, and then of course we'll have the basketball thing coming up, and I usually do like a Formula One fantasy league where you get to pick 5 drivers, and we were going to do it this year, but the way the season fell apart, we just kind of didn't worry about it. But that's always fun. It's always fun making up the team names on there too. I still love it. For some reason, Mira had Del Taco Racing. I don't know why that's funny to me, but I just thought that was so funny. All right. I don't think we have any update from Jared since we're not playing a game and since the RoboGus thing. I'm really curious to see which direction he goes with that. I'm sure he's going to get his writers staff together, his team of writers, and they're going to come up with a whole new storyline for the next season of the whole Eagle and Robo Gus. There was a lot of outpouring of grief over. There were a lot more people upset about Robo Gus than there were about Gus. Did you notice that?
Robo Gus, a beloved part of the show now, and as we said all along, we're just a vehicle for the delivery of those items. So.
There was a lot of spontaneous outpouring of grief over that. So, all right, well, I think it's time to push the button.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right, and what do we got this week?
Our first question comes from the aforementioned Jared Albrick.
Oh, okay.
Who says, first question, how exactly did Van break John's webcam?
fair question. Fair.
I know. No. But then he says his real question is, fast answer, gut reaction question. Please rank these 5 Auburn coaches on how excited you were with each announcement when they were announced. Bowden, Tuberville, Chizik, Malzahn, Harsin.
That is an excellent, excellent question, and I'm actually embarrassed that I didn't think of it, including it in our show outline. That is excellent, Jared. That is really good. Each one kind of has its own context, though. Like when we hired Terry Bowden, it was right when we were waiting for the big NCAA probation hammer to drop, and I think we were all just kind of like, I don't know if there was a sense at that time that anybody we got was going to last very long, because we thought they were going to have a horrible beginning. Of course, it ended up being 20-0. But at the time, there was a real big dark cloud. I mean, there was as big of a dark cloud over the Auburn family and it, when we hired Terry Bowden right before that, as I can remember. And honestly, he kind of came in, you know, we look back at Terry as this little chatterbox, annoying little guy. But honestly, that if there was ever a time that was like welcome, I thought, we needed somebody to come in that was all Mr. Optimism and grins and smiles. And, you know, I mean, he fit the time.
He did, but also, like, we were on probation. It was following Pat Dye.
Yeah.
And he was the head coach of Sanford. So my expectations and optimism were not high.
Yeah. Yeah. I just kept thinking he's got Bobby Bowden's kid. That was it. I thought, well, we're basically hiring Bobby Bowden Jr., so how bad can it be? But yeah, well, it turned out to be pretty bad. The first 20 games, though, you can't take that away. I don't know. I'm going to say I was really excited when we got Tuberville. I think I was most excited when we got Gus, because I thought something would happen that we wouldn't get Gus, and that was who I really wanted. And
he
I really
was
wanted
number one on your list all the way.
He was number one on my list, and Chizik was number one on my list when we hired him. And
I wasn't as excited. I mean, I guess I agree. I was more excited when we hired Malzahn than Chizik.
Yeah, most people.
And I was
were.
Probably more excited when we hired Tuberville than we hired Chizik too. I guess I don't know.
Yeah, I think we were pretty excited when we got Tuberville because we knew he was a good coach on his way mm-hmm. up, and you know it was kind of like, can we get him? Can we get him? He said he's going to leave Ole Miss in a pine box, so we have to find a pine box he can live in and not be buried in, and that worked out. So yeah, I guess I would say I was most excited for Gus, and then kind of a tie between Chizik and Tuberville. And then, but I forgot about our current coach.
So how would you rank Harsin compared to this? Being? To me, Harsin is in the Tuberville tier.
Yeah.
Because I know he's a good coach, and I'm happy we got him.
I think that's exactly it. I was really excited for Gus just because I knew I loved that offense. I kind of knew what we were going to be getting, and I liked him as a person too. And I loved the 2009 and 2010 offenses, and I saw him recruiting guys like Michael Dyer and I thought this is, and Cam, you know, and I thought this is going to be great. So Gus is always probably going to be my number one in terms of when they first came in. But I think that, yeah, in that second tier, I got Tuberville and Harsin, I think. I think that's fair. Then Chizik and then Terry.
Yeah. All right. Next question is from Dan Thompson, who we kind of already answered it. What coaches from the current staff would you keep?
Mm-hmm. Me, I would just keep Cadillac, if that. I know there's talk about maybe he should keep Rodney Garner and Travis Williams. I guess Travis, but we heard a lot of conflicting things about Travis Williams there at the end, didn't we?
Yeah, and we heard stuff about Rodney Garner too.
That's so true.
I don't know what to believe about that stuff. So my feeling is like, you know, Harsin's going to talk to Alan Green and get his side of things, and then he's going to interview these people like he's going to interview other people and make a decision about who he wants to keep and want to keep.
If he's got a young, dynamic linebacker coach that can recruit like Travis Williams, that's fine. If he doesn't and he thinks that Travis Williams works out, I mean, up until 2 weeks ago, I had nothing but positive things to say about T. Will. So, who do you believe, you know?
I agree.
Okay.
So our next question comes from friend of the podcast, Auburn Elvis.
Yep.
And first, he had a really good suggestion for the future bowl pick'ems after this year. What we're going to do is we're going to have one prize for like the overall winner, but then one for the best name of your pick'em pool, the most creative name for your picks. Because it's kind of like, you know, it's like picking a fantasy football team name or something. You can get fun with it. So
you can.
So I like that idea a lot. We're definitely going to do that next year.
Well, his current one is the AU, the Auburn Board of Trustees made these picks, which is a fair name since he's in next to last just above me. So there you go.
All right. So, but his real question is, I know it's super early and hard to predict, but what changes to the football program are you hoping for next season that will suggest things have improved?
I don't know. What do you think about that? Well, how will we immediately know that progress is being made?
I mean, ultimately progress to be measured like it's always measured, like wins and losses, right?
Sure.
I mean, I do think I will be interested in, you know, if somebody comes into Auburn and does things in a little bit different way, and that we, you know, are doing things slightly differently. Again, like as an example, you know, Gus wanted to kind of do things the way he wanted to do them on offense. And I don't think he had a lot of use for kind of analytics about offense and that kind of stuff. And so I've been interested to, you know, are there stories about Harsin or his staff hiring some of those people or doing that kind of stuff? So I don't know.
I think it comes down to, does he bring in some transfers? Does he coach up what we've got? Does he run a clean program and the players don't get out of control like they did like in the last year of Chizik? That's the last year of Chizik is what we want to avoid at all costs, where there seemed to be no pilot captaining the ship and we're just careening wildly from side to side as we're about to sink. You know, that there was a
I don't think that's gonna happen.
No, I don't either. Right. That's the first, I think, sign of and then beyond that, looking like we know what we're doing on offense, that we have a plan, that we have a cohesive identity, and we're getting better at it. That's the next
Yes. That even against good teams, we have a good plan on offense and we're executing it well. I think that'll be interesting to see. I would say as a warning to Auburn fans, this is just my thought that I think there's going to be some roster turnover. Yeah, I think there's going to be some players that declare for the NFL draft. I think there's going to be some players that transfer.
Yep.
And I think there's going to be some, you know, some players that transfer in. So in addition, we still have the, you know, the signing day in February. So I think those things are going to happen. And we just have to kind of roll with it and not kind of freak out every time you hear something.
Yep. I agree. It's just going it's all going to even out, hopefully.
Yeah, that's right. But it's normal in this kind of situation when these things happen.
Sure.
We got an on Twitter from Ben05AU who says, y'all need to release another Wishbone podcast. I keep finding myself listening to the Coaching Circuit podcast and finishing up fired up over Auburn administration, only to remind myself they did end up making a solid hire.
Well, here we go. We're rolling one out.
Josh Corbett asks, what does Harsin have to do to prove to the Auburn family that he is a legit coach?
Well, I think the things we just talked about is I just want to see him be be firmly in command and have the program in his hand, in his grip, in a grasp, not loose, not kind of wild and loose, but him at the captaining the ship at the wheel, the helmsman, the captain, steering us firmly in a good direction. And you can get a sense of that always from a lot of things, you know, from all the little news reports that come out in the off season, you know, anybody getting arrested, anybody, you know, that kind of thing. We haven't had a lot of that, fortunately, certainly not under Gus. So,
but I think, I mean, you know, again, theoretically, we'll have spring practice, and I think you'll hear all these stories about a different spring practice and how things are working. And I think that'll be a time for optimism and stuff. So I look forward to that. All right. Absolutely. Our next question is an email where people emailed into auwishbone@gmail.com. And this first one's from Parker Neal, who said, hey guys, love the show. Long time listener, first time writer. do y'all know if Harsin is going to coach against Northwestern in the bowl game since he was officially announced to say coach? Is he going to keep the current staff and then keep who he wants afterward? He talked about first impressions during his press conference in relationship to the players, but I wonder if that also applied to the coaches. Thanks for the great shows, and War Eagle, Parker.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I think we've addressed some of it, but my impression is that Harsin is going to try to be there and observe, but that it's pretty much the old staff's last hurrah, right, to go out on a blaze of glory, hopefully.
He contacted them and just talked to them and said, if there's something I could do to help, I'll do it. And so if he can, you know, I think they may consult him and he may give him advice, whatever, but he will not be on the field coaching in this game.
Now, it would be interesting to pull what we pulled in 2007. Remember where we had Al Borges the whole year, and then we said, oh, yeah, we'll just use that same thing in the bowl game. And then they went in and installed Tony Franklin's entire offense during bowl practice and came out with a completely different offense. That would be interesting, but no, I don't think Harsin's going to do that. I really don't.
No. And again, it's only been a few days. You know, players came back to start practicing Saturday. So I don't think they're going to change anything like that, but I do think he's part of it. His thing is going to be evaluating the players and the coaches in the
building. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Our next question is from John Otsuki, who we just heard is doing well in the bowl pick'em, who says, John Avan, I hope you all had a nice Christmas. And if this news made you do a pod, you would have otherwise skipped for the holiday. We appreciate it. What are the benchmarks for success for Harsin in the first 3 years? Does he get a rebuilding year? Does he need to win an SEC championship? Do we lose our minds if he goes 8-4? War Eagle, John.
Excellent question as well. And all I can speak for is myself, but I'm going to say it's another one of those things where I just want to see progress and some sense of identity. We can, you know, it's kind of like Pat Dye's first year, we went 5-6, but those six were close for the most part, and you could tell it was coming together. It wasn't like 42-0 every week. It was more like 13-7. And, you know, if he goes 7-5, 8-4, but it looks like we're fighting, we're playing hard, we have an identity, particularly on offense, we're not giving up a whole lot of points, and it's a tough, hard-fought game, I think that's going to get him nothing but goodwill. He doesn't have to go 10-2 or whatever in the regular season, I don't think the first couple of years. That said, I think that in his first 3 years, which I think was the window that he mentioned, I think in his first 3 years, he needs to have at least one season where he does notably well, like a 2017 type, you know, year, and get the sense that we're building up rather than we start out there and they're heading their way down like we did under Terry and like we did under Gus for the most part. What do you think about that?
I like that. I agree. I mean, I think the other thing is, like, you don't want to say an absolute, but in his first 3 years, he needs to beat Alabama and Georgia at least once, right?
Yes. I mean, yes. And LSU.
He can't go 0-3 there. So I think that's that's the minimum bar, I think.
How do you think
Gus, you're right.
How do you think Gus feels about never winning at LSU, Alabama, and Georgia? It's got a stick in his craw, doesn't it?
I'm sure it bothers him. And again, like, we, especially at LSU, there's a couple of games we should have won down
there. Absolutely. It's part of why he's gone.
That's right. So, you know, I like the idea about progress. I want to see building. I want to see get better. And I want to see, like you said, his identity in the program. But I want to see us, you know, kind of, you know, being competitive with Georgia and Alabama in every way. And being a place that players want to come play and be successful. All right. Our next question is from Johnny Dent, who says, Harsin's plan to recruit nationally, genius or naive or both? He says, where you going, gentlemen?
I'm going to say both, and I think that says it all.
That's fair. I mean, I think I actually think it's a good thing. You know, Alabama and Clemson are getting good players on the West Coast. Yeah. The SEC is a national brand now. And there are kids out there who are really good players who would want to go to an SEC school, but maybe they're not getting asked. And so I think, you know, if he brings a few people that have good recruiting connections on the West Coast and go out there and identify players and get them, then I think it's great. I don't have any, you know, I think it makes a lot of sense to expand your recruiting footprint. Again, Auburn's core area is always going to be Georgia and Alabama and Florida. You know, get a few guys from Mississippi or Tennessee, Louisiana, or South Carolina, whatever. That's, you know, one thing. But that's the core of it, is those three core states. But if we get we've got a few guys in the current class from Texas. If we continue to do that, that's great. But if we go further west and get a few guys from, you know, Arizona or California or wherever, I think that's great. I think it's, you know, this staff and this coach have a lot of experience with the high schools out there, you know, what to look for. And so I think it's never a bad thing to cast a little bit wider net. We should have the recruiting resources to support that operation and give them what they need to make it work.
Yeah, and I think it's a different equation with him doing it as opposed to like if Gus were going to say, I'm going to go recruit California. People are like, why? This is a coach that probably can do that more successfully just because of who he is and where he's from and all that. So we'll give him a chance and see.
Yeah, he's like, I've been in these high schools before. I've recruited guys in there. I know the high school coaches, and I can go out there and get some guys.
Yep.
All right, our next question is from Jim McCrory, who says, do you think Auburn people need to shut up about the Kevin Steele conspiracy? My reasoning is that hiring Kevin Steele and at least some of the defensive staff could be a smart move for Auburn and Harsin.
Well, we talked about that. I think that there are coaches on the defensive staff, but we just don't know what to think now. So I'm going to leave it to Harsin and Alan Green, and we'll see what they make of it, because I honestly don't know.
I mean, I do think the fact that Steele was a candidate that was pushed by some people for the head coaching job makes it hard to keep him.
Yeah.
I think it's that's how it is.
Yep.
And so I think if your ultimate goal is to keep Kevin Steele, that didn't contribute to that.
No, that actively hurt it.
Hurt it. Yeah. Yes. So I think that's a problem.
Good job. Good job.
So, I mean, I think they may keep some staff, but I think it's going to be very hard to keep Kevin Steele. That's just my opinion.
I agree.
You know.
Will he go to LSU?
I don't know. I think that makes a lot of sense. LSU just fired their defense coordinator, paid him a lot of money to go away. So they blowed up their whole coaching staff, offensive coordinator, Ensminger, and the defensive line coach retired. They're basically, you know, in 2 years, they've turned over the entire coaching staff, every single person, I think.
Good grief.
Just about. Maybe one or two others left, but it's a complete turnover.
So. Good.
All right, last question is from Bradley Blackman. Mm-hmm. He says, how much do you guys feel that Harsin's decision to leave his alma mater was based on their program not being able to compete for the playoffs and a national championship? I love the dude's tenacity and gumption to take a job totally outside his comfort zone to compete against the best of the best. I like to think that he brings some of that Boise swagger with him. War Eagle Bradley Blackman.
Yeah, I agree. No, I think that's pretty much it.
It is. And I like it that he, a lot of people think that, but I think he's kind of backing it up, and I mm-hmm. think he can. And I think it's exciting to have a young coach who thinks that way and is ready for the challenges. I think he knows that he doesn't know everything, but he's, but also he's hungry to compete at this level and learn and get better. And take Auburn to championship places. He said that every day they're going to, I think Auburn fans had to be happy with his opening press conference.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I think he hit the notes that people wanted to hear about hard work and getting better every day and that kind of thing.
Please clap.
All right. Well, let's take a trip, John. We're going to wrap this thing up here. Bring it home. Bring it in for a landing like a plane flying in from Boise with a new coach on board.
A trip around the SEC.
And we do have one SEC team in the playoffs. So if you want to really quickly talk about Alabama, probably going to destroy Notre Dame. I don't know why this even. It's funny. Notre Dame, Alabama has only beaten Notre Dame twice in history, as far as I know. Once was that Ray Perkins game in 86 that they immediately made a painting out of, even though it was just a random regular season game. And there was a bowl game somewhere in there. But otherwise, Notre Dame's always owned Alabama. I know it was. No, it was that 86 game, and then it was the 2012 national championship game where Notre Dame didn't even show up. That's it. That's the only times Alabama's ever beaten Notre Dame. That's hilarious. And then Clemson, Ohio State looks like it could be a fun little tilt.
It'd be better. They've played a few times in the last few years, mm-hmm. so I've seen this song a lot. And Alabama's going to beat Notre Dame by 30, so
sure.
That is no interest for me.
Yeah. The Music City Bowl, as far as I know, has been canceled. Missouri, COVID outbreak. Yep. That one's done.
It may not be the last one. So
no. It's interesting that they said the playoffs will not be canceled. They will merely be postponed if something happens. We could end up playing the playoffs in February, like the Super Bowl. We got Mississippi State Tulsa on New Year's Eve. And it's also, we got three New Year's Eve games: Mississippi State, Tulsa, Tennessee, West Virginia, and Arkansas, TCU. Do any of those three games interest you at all in terms of saying anything about them?
I'll watch them again because it's SEC teams and bowl games and it's New Year's Eve, but none of them are like, woo, man, I got to see that.
Yeah, I have nothing to say about them. New Year's Day is quite the different story, though. We got the Citrus Bowl, Auburn and Northwestern at noon.
Then the Peach Bowl is before Auburn Northwestern. That starts at noon Eastern, and then Auburn Northwestern is the 1 o'clock game.
Oh, okay. So we're going to watch an hour of Georgia Cincinnati, which should be very enlightening and interesting, and then switch over to Auburn Northwestern. Find that game boring, and people will switch back to Georgia Cincinnati. And then why would they stack them like that and they'd have another game until 7 Central, 8 Eastern? That doesn't make any sense.
No, this is wrong, actually. The New Year's Day, it's Georgia Cincinnati at noon Eastern.
Okay.
And then Auburn Northwestern at 1, and then the two playoff games.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
The Cotton Bowl is on here, Florida, Oklahoma. That's actually Wednesday night, so it's the 30th.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That'll be good. Yeah.
Yeah. Although all of Florida's receivers have left. So Pitts and Tony and those guys, none of them are playing in this game. So,
oh, wow. Well, that'll be a fun game, though. Florida-Oklahoma is a really nice matchup. I'm looking forward to that.
That's the one SEC game I'm probably the most excited about.
I'm curious to see Georgia against Cincinnati because everybody talks up Cincinnati and they got to go play an actual legitimate SEC team who seems to be peaking at the right time, too, by the way. All right, and then finally, January 2nd, we got the Orange Bowl, Texas A&M, North Carolina. That should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that matchup. And Kentucky, North Carolina State, about which, honestly, I'd rather rub broken glass in my eyes. And the Outback Bowl being played somewhere out back between Ole Miss, Indiana. That could be a lot of fun. There's some interesting matchups.
I think Ole Miss, Indiana is really fun. Two really fun offensive teams. And I think you're right. Texas A&M, North Carolina should be fun. But it's also Mack Brown again against Texas A&M after, you know, so. And it's two really strong kind of running teams. I think that's gonna be a really fun game Saturday night.
It's like where did Terry Bowden just end up? He just got hired by a new
Louisiana Monroe.
Yeah, so like if Auburn plays Louisiana Monroe in a bowl game with Terry Bowden, that would be fun. Okie dokie. Well, there you go. There's actually some fairly interesting bowl matchups coming up over the next few days. I'm looking forward to them, and then we'll eventually get around to Alabama versus probably Clemson, maybe Ohio State. For the either a matchup of the 2014 playoff or a matchup of every other playoff, it seems like the Alabama Clemson era. God help us all! It just can't end soon enough. All right, John. Any final thoughts before we wrap up for tonight?
No, I'm like a lot of Auburn fans. I'm glad the coaching search is over. I'm glad we got a good coach, and I'm excited to see what happens with it. And I look forward to talking about it over the next year and see where things go.
That's right. So next week we'll be able to talk about some bowl games and how everything played out so far. And we'll maybe be looking at basketball too. That'll be fun. Get back into playing. I believe we're playing Arkansas coming up.
We are. Very excited.
Free Sharif. All right. Our time is up. We thank you for yours. Wargle, everybody. Wargle, John.
Wargle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.
Go to bed.